I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to Clicking Balls. This is pretty much start of season four of Clicking Balls. It's been going on that long now. And we're still 2 weeks out from the AFL season, so we haven't got much to go there. But my name is Heath, and usually the question I ask every week is your highlight of the week, but it's been a long off-season. So what's your, Josh, your highlight of the off-season so far?
I just like how sports stars have confidence, yeah? You have to.
I assume.
Yeah. Now, sledging's part of cricket. Like we've established that. It's been for centuries. But how confident do you have to be to sledge someone when your last name is de Kock? I mean, come on. Especially when you're going low-hanging fruit after, you know, going after someone's wife. I'm thinking there's a lot more coming back at him.
I guess he's heard it his whole life, though. Yeah. I mean, really. I mean, what else are you going
to
say?
Well, your name sounds like a penis. To be fair, Dave Warner's probably heard that Sonny Bill fucked Candace, his missus, his whole damn dating career, too.
I got to say, not his whole life, but...
The whole time, the whole life of their kids. It's a bit rough, the crowd turning up with Sonny Bill in fucking masks, though.
I wasn't aware of that rumour until that happened, so...
Yeah, I didn't know anything about it.
Oh, it wasn't a rumour. She was videoed.
Dating him before.
So. Yeah, they were... And she was dating Brent Staker before that, too. Before... Warner after Sonny Bill. So, yeah, something along the lines of, you know, rugby players being rugby players videotape themselves all the time doing stupid shit.
Yeah.
So, Sonny Bill Williams videotaped him fucking Candace in a toilet of some RSL or something like that.
Yeah, well, this was a human this time.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, a couple of days later, Todd Carney videotaped himself taking a piss in his own mouth. So, you know, it's one of those ones where it's pretty bad for a general member of the public, but for a rugby player, it's pretty good, actually.
Do they have a women's NRL yet?
I don't think an official one, but there are plenty of women's leagues.
Right.
But yeah.
It's been on the telly.
Has that?
It's fucking scary.
I know that I've seen the women's rugby sevens and that kind of stuff. Yeah. So I think there might have been World Cup recently. But it was funny. There was another rugby, was it league or union? I'm pretty sure it was rugby league. Yes, he's a Brisbane Broncos player who got arrested in America over the off season. He was just, you know, looked like he was off his head. Probably.
Yeah, and probably was.
And he threatened to kill some 9-year-old kid.
Yeah, that's the one he broke into someone's house, like did a home invasion.
Yeah, pretty much. But I liked it when it came back and, you know, the reaction of some of the other NRLs was like, well, he didn't hit a woman at least, and, you know, we put up with that, so it's not that bad, is it?
Fucking hell. Well, when you've set that standard.
Yeah, well.
You're like, well, it didn't happen on the field. Well, we tried to kill a 9-year-old kid. I mean, fucking come on.
Yeah. Holy fuck.
Brenton, you got a highlight of... The last six months.
Let's see.
Is footy season finished?
Didn't manage to watch a ball of cricket in pretty much the whole off season.
Didn't you really?
No. Had one TV, moving house. Missus decided to stand that one up on the kitchen tiles next to a cupboard, and that fell over and smashed. And the second TV just shit herself. So now I've gone through two TVs and haven't managed to watch a single bit of sport. So I've had to be...
Which one was the TV I gave you?
That was the one that is not the one that smashed, the one that just stopped working.
Just stopped working. Yeah, well, it's an old TV.
Well, it was going to be my computer screen. That was the problem. So now I'm like, shit. I mean, I was always going to get a new telly. But yeah, so that was disappointing. Last night I went to a whiskey event in Starwood in Port Melbourne. Got royally hammered. And then somehow we went with some of the bottlers to another whiskey bar in the city and got even more hammered. And not feeling great today. So I was trying to think through of what I did in the whole off-season. Like, I can't remember last night.
I'm going to say, it all got a race last night.
Yes, exactly.
Well, since it is the off-season, and let's be honest, we haven't watched... Have you watched any of the AFLW or JLT series?
Yeah, I went to one of the games. It was a blowout between Carlton and Western Bulldogs.
Yeah.
Wasn't fun.
Mm.
Well, I want to support it, but it was shit. Like, let's not gild the lily or, you know, polish the turd. It was a terrible game. Had fun in the stands, but yeah.
And I've watched the Hawthorn games in the JLT, but nothing else. Even sometimes I forgot JLT was even on. Yeah. You know, oh, it's on, is it? I watched like a quarter and went, yeah.
It's not right, the same, is it?
No, it's not. But I've already booked, bought tickets for round one, so we've got a couple of games there.
Yep.
Looking forward to that.
I didn't watch any of AFOX. Was that the hit or miss? Or,
no, look, it is what it is.
It was the wrong way to do it. I mean, yep. AFLX is meant for people that don't have enough room or enough players or enough skill to play the proper game.
Yeah.
And AFL players are the exact opposite of that.
Yeah.
So it can work, but it's not good for TV. It's not meant for that kind of standard.
Sounds like a recruitment strategy for Port Adelaide. Yeah. You know, no talent, and we'll find out who the best of them are.
Well, Jack Watts did kick six on the weekend.
I didn't see that, yeah.
AFLX is good to get people who aren't aware of the sport into the sport.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And as a Wednesday night fitness run, be pretty fucking great.
Yeah. It's meant for countries other than Australia, pretty much.
Yeah.
But it's funny, look at it. There's a lot more about it that's basketball than football. The quick kick-ins from the back line, even the center bounce has been replaced with a bowler.
I'd still say it's pretty closer to football than basketball. On the whole, I know what you're saying, but they do use a football.
Yeah, but the ground and the way it's laid out, even the grass. Way they set up, the 3-point thing is
goalposts. Yeah. There's still a lot of things about footy there.
The teenagers don't get paid.
Yeah, I'm willing to go one on one. I think we've got 3-point line for a start. You've got the square.
10-point line, yeah.
Yeah, 3-point, 10-point. You've got the square, the quick rebound. You've got the.
There is still that issue of kicking the ball, though. Live subs isn't in basketball.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. It'd be a much more interesting game if it was.
Yeah. All right, so we thought to fill up some of the off-season space, and because we've gone and done all 18 teams' previews early, which is unusual for us, we thought, inspired a little bit by the Dollop podcast that did...
Rube Woodell, a
profile of a baseball player called Rube Woodell, and it is brilliant. So much so that we couldn't recreate it because they perfected it. Look, they did great.
Check it out because it's worth it.
I think because they had an association with Will Anderson, so it was one of the most popular podcasts in Australia. Even though the guys had never been here until they did later on. So we thought we'd have a look at some other loose units, and I don't know what we're calling this, but catalog of loose units or whatever it is, but other weird people from the world of sport.
Yep.
So I thought I'll kick this one off with a bloke by the name of Henry Unick.
Henry Unick. Unick.
So it's Y-U-N-I-C-K. I think his parents were from like Yugoslavia or the Ukraine and emigrated.
Right. Jesus Christ, you changed that quick. Unick.
So he's born in the 20s in Pennsylvania. Grew up on a farm.
I bet his nickname was Dickless.
Well, it wasn't, actually. We'll get to his nickname. His nickname is coming up.
Yeah, he's Yugoslavian. No, everyone was scared to give him shit growing up in Pennsylvania.
But you're like, this is about car racing. So anyway, he grew up, left school at 16 because his old man died. And he thought, well, I've got to work the farm to support mum and his sisters.
It was in the 20s in Pennsylvania. So that assumes,
20s in Pennsylvania from immigrant. How many sisters did you have? Seven, eight?
I think he only had a couple. We're in the 30s now because he was born in the 20s.
Yep.
But he was pretty handy on a wrench and that kind of stuff. For example, need a new tractor. So he had an old junked car. So he built a tractor out of the junk car.
Jesus.
Good on that.
Hey, he was 12.
Holy shit.
Not bad at all. He wasn't much for that book learning, but, with a wrench in his hand, he was pretty good. Anyway, war comes around, he goes off and he flies the B-17 bomber.
Yep.
In 1941. I think it was called the Flying Fortress.
Yeah. Oh, that's when we had like the gunners at the front, like the pods below the
big massive thing it was. And anyway, he's a pretty good pilot, but this introduced him to aerodynamics and all that kind of stuff. And, he flew friendlies and bombing missions as well all over the place. And he was flying over Florida once, and he thought, that looked nice. So once he finished, he got married and moved to Florida.
Oh, I wish you were going to say he was flying back over and went, fuck it. Hung a left. Land here. That'll work.
I feel like a flyer. I hate Florida.
just jump out mid-flight.
He was a bit of a loose unit of the Army, too. Like he said, he was really good at his job, but he'd go out and get pissed and, whatever else he could do to get himself into trouble.
Hey, it was a different time.
But anyway...
the Army blokes don't do that anymore.
No, it's rugby.
While he was looking after the farm, too, he used to build and race motorcycles in his spare time. And he not reading manuals, you know, just have a little tinker, see what goes on. And one smoked as it went around the track. It's pretty fast. It was nice loose, but it smoked so much that the announcer called him Smokey.
The old burning oil trick. Mercedes learned that. Fucking cheeky fuckers.
Well, we're getting to that too. So his nickname was Smokey from then on in. Sorry, just grabbing a drink. So after the war, he settled down in Daytona, Florida, and he's opened up his own little garage called Smokey's Best Damn Garage in Town.
It sounds like it should serve barbecue grill as well. Smokey's Best Damn Garage and Ribs.
It would these days, I'm sure. But, I mean, that's not bad. And it turns out somebody believed him because one of the...
Well, it's up on the sign.
But he was fucking good. And like we said, he built a tractor out of a car when he was 12.
Yeah.
So the local stock racer, he said, mate, well, I need somebody on the wrenches. Come give us a hand. And he'd never done stock cars, knew nothing about it before. He goes, all right, we'll give this a go. So he's done that. He's gone with the local racers. Knew nothing about it. Joined up with him, and they won. He's gone, yeah, mate, he's pretty good because he's pretty knack on it. And he thought, well, this is interesting. You know, I like this. And when I was flying planes, he read a lot of books about aerodynamics and that kind of stuff. He thought, I could apply that to cars.
Yep.
So he thought, I'm going to give this a go. So one of the first things he did was, you know, they only do left-hand turns in stock racing.
Yep.
So he figured if the engine moves the other way, it's putting all the weight on the outside.
Yep.
We've got to evenly distribute the weight, so I'm going to turn the engine around. So he turned, because it doesn't matter which way an engine turns.
Yeah.
But he figured, he calls it his reverse engine. So he had to reverse the whole car, basically, inside, just to get that little bit of extra traction. It kind of worked, but it kind of didn't.
Right.
Well, that's what they do with cruise liners. They have the big centrifuges and whatever, so they don't rock.
Exactly. But remember, he hasn't got teams of scientists telling him this shit. He's just figuring it out as he goes. But see, in stock cars in those days, you had Ford and Pontiac were the big ones. They were the factory teams.
Yep.
So he's decided, I don't need a factory team. I want to do my own thing. So he's got together with his mates and what they've done. So they've gone to one of these races. And they've said, you know, you got to have your stock cars.
Yep.
And the rule book is kind of thin. And that's where Smokey's come in. He thought, right, well, this tells you what you can't do.
Yep.
Doesn't tell me, just because it's not in the rule book doesn't mean I can't do it.
Yep.
So he didn't like the term cheating. But he was known as either the worst cheat you've ever met or an absolute genius when it came to finding the grey areas of the rules.
So at what stage did he get his American citizenship? Pretty much immediately after this?
No, he was born in America. Oh. I said his parents were from overseas.
I feel like part of the whole thing about stock cars is it has to be a stock car, so it has to be for sale, doesn't it?
Yes, right. But they have factory teams.
Homogenated. See,
this is the 60s now. So how do you check that it is a stock? You go by the profile of the car. So basically, does it look right? And you know, it's got this curve, it's got that. So,
well, they used to have the cutout things. They'd lay out on top of them.
Yeah, pretty much. Like pretty much.
Pretty much a straight edge that was shaped to the right thing. Like, yeah, pretty much. Looks right.
So you've got the factory Fords and the factory Pontiacs, and he's rocked up in a Chevrolet, what's it bloody called?
I hope you say
Chevelle.
Bootlegger.
Chevelle.
Yeah. So it's not a great car. But anyway, and they're
right. I don't know this car from a street rod.
Yeah. The Chevelle. They had a few different ones. But it's a nice looking car.
So
I think.
And he's got pole. He's not driving. He's got his mate who's driving it. His mate, by the way, is Fireball Roberts. He's called
Smoking and Fireball. That is awesome.
It's called Fireball because he was a baseball pitcher and that's how fast he was. Guess how he died?
Crashed car.
In a fireball. Yep. Anyway, it was very painful.
Move on.
Well, the story's not
about it. It was very painful. Sympathy to the parents. Bye-bye.
Should have named it Smokey too.
It becomes important later on. So they go...
Should have called him the Bandit.
A non factory team has come first and they're like, mate, how have you done it with that car? Because it's Ford and Pontiac are the only ones that ever win.
Yeah.
It's like in Australian V8s, Ford versus Holden, and then all of a sudden, fucking Kia comes along and wins.
Well, Nissan did it.
Nissan's different though. And they couldn't figure it out. Like, they check the engine, the engine's all stock. And they check the profile, and the profile's all stock. And then a couple of months later, somebody weighed the car.
Yep.
About 200 pounds lighter.
Right.
What he'd done was he lowered the roof, raised the floor, done everything. So the profile was right, but the car was essentially a 7/8 model. He built it. So it looked exactly the same. It was just 7/8 of the size. So you got the same engine. It's just lighter.
Right.
He got disqualified.
I'd be even more impressed if he actually got like a die-cast Hot Wheels model and just scaled it up.
Well, it's pretty...
Oh, scaling down, scaling up, same thing. But I can buy this one for $1.20. Which would have been about, I don't know, what the currency was back then.
I don't know, shillings.
12 cents and whatever, I don't know.
But he was a genius. Everyone knew he was a genius, and they'd look for the difference in the rules with him. So in 64, though, he really changed the game of open wheel racing, as they called it.
Yep.
So they rocked up at one of these events, and his car that he pulled in, remember, no factories, no scientists behind this.
So this was an Indy car.
He put a wing on the car.
Oh, right.
Nobody had ever seen it before.
Yep.
And they went, he said the idea was, I want more drag around so we can go faster around corners. And it did. It went the fastest around corners. The problem was the wing was too big, was too heavy, so he was slower on the straights.
Yep.
So it kind of cancelled itself out. But the thinking was there. Mm-hmm. And he was the first one that thought, they banned it instantly.
Right.
And then in, this is in NASCAR. So about 6 months later, wings are popping up on all cars all over the place, including Formula One.
Right.
They started to put the science behind it, but he was the first one that thought of it.
There you go. Oh, not, fuck.
Not a little bad one. Like I said, stock cars, Formula Ones, everyone's doing it. Him and his mate Fireball, they won the Daytona 500 2 years in a row, and they're the first ones to get three pole positions in a row. But like I said, Fireball Roberts died in a fireball, and it was horrible. Like, he was in the hospital for 40 days trying to recover, and right. Eventually, you know, everything else. So he said,
there's
right,
no Nicky Lauda.
He's still doing all of his mechanics, but then he started to do a campaign for safety. And NASCAR were like, no, don't worry about it, mate.
Yep.
You know, you're a bit of an idiot.
An American sport that wanted to bury safety reports.
Well, one of his ideas.
Tell me it's not so.
A sport that was born out of trying to outrun the cops with the car full of booze.
Well, yeah, at least they kept the reports. NFL hasn't done that.
That's true.
So one of his ideas was, you know, we've got all these spare tyres. What do we make a wall out of the spare tyres? And that way it can absorb the impact.
Right.
He invented the fucking tyre wall.
All this shit.
NASCAR said no.
What were the grounds for saying no?
Who knows?
That, just come from Smokey?
Pretty much you, that's why.
And they're like, I know this is like not just about safety. There's some angle here he's going to try to work. He's going to put bumpers on the side of it.
Bounce off the walls.
He's just going to have a rail there where he just floors it.
It's like, unlike Rube Waddell. Rube Waddell was the biggest idiot. This guy was just an absolute genius.
Yeah.
The NASCAR, there was a bloke named France who was the head of NASCAR. So, like I said, they didn't have much of a rule book. But
how the fuck did a bloke named France get to be the head of NASCAR in America, those stages? Yeah. They would have
basically
crucified him.
Ford and Pontiac would complain about anything that he did.
Yeah.
I nearly called him Rube then. Anything that Smokey did, because they didn't want him to get close. And like I said, he won a few races and that kind of stuff. So they'd come around and have a beer with him, and he'd be on the wrenches and talking. And then the next day, they'd go tell France what had happened, and he'd come back and go, all right, Smokey, we need to have a look at this, and this. Because they didn't want him, because he was, you know, independent. So every time they said anything. So him and NASCAR didn't have a good relationship. So there was, he had lots of other things that he'd find ways around the rules. For example, there was a maximum fuel tank size you could have.
Yep.
And obviously, if you go to the pits less, it's better off. So a bigger fuel tank is actually an advantage, of course. So what he'd do is, and I'm picking out the numbers. Say it's a 90-litre fuel tank.
Yep.
Is that normal? I don't know.
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
100-litre in F1 at the moment. Yeah. So.
There you go. So 90 litres, let's say. And they'd fill it up and check. You go, 90 litres, great, no worries. And he'd drive back to the pits. He'd have a basketball in it. Pop the basketball. There's an extra 3 gallons you can fit in. Or whatever it was.
Right.
So the basketball gets sucked in the fuel pump.
Well, no, it just sit in the tank, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah.
So there's an extra couple. They figured that out. So I thought, right, what can I do next? Fuel lines. So fuel lines were 5/8 of an inch thick, and they're pretty straight. So what, you're talking...
5/8. What's that in metric? Like
2 centimetres?
Yeah.
Yeah, about 2 centimetres. 2.2 centimetres.
Sure.
Yeah, bit over 1/2 inch, so yeah.
And go straight from the tank to the engine, I imagine.
You assume so.
In the broader sense. Yeah. So what he'd do instead was got 2-inch thick fuel lines, coiled them. So he had 10 feet of fuel lines.
Christ.
There's an extra 20 litres of fuel.
Wow.
So once...
You need a petrol pump the size of a small nation.
Yeah. Luckily, he's good on the wrench. Yeah. So there was this once where they're doing their scrutineering or whatever they do, their checks, and they said, Smokey, there's 16 different things you've got to fix before this can go out there, but we want to have a look at the fuel tank again. They took the fuel tank out of the car, and he goes, make it 17, and drove it off without the fuel tank. Because he still had all... I should say, too, all these stories, like I said, 60s and 70s, and Smokey was a great raconteur.
Yeah, run with that.
So the story's got better as he went along.
Yeah.
So anyway. They should. No stories get worse. unless you're a Nazi or something, I suppose. They should probably stay bad.
I went dark quick.
So later on, he did everything to make his car thicker, from things like he'd use thinner glass. Right. He'd dip the panels in acid just to thin them down.
Jesus Christ.
He'd have the car just tilted forward and the windscreen tilted back. So, and he had an oil injection button for the driver. So he could actually do it while they're in the pits. He could do the oil. So there was one less thing, I guess.
Oh, okay, yeah.
But it was
depending on the... it could be also oil's more energy dense than petrol. But lighting it's a motherfucker. So if you're actually mixing it in the tank, you can get more energy out of it.
Yep.
Even though it's not allowed.
There were things like, the fuel lines would be greased with nitrix and, all that kind of stuff.
Jesus. I just want to see Smokey in the 60s going to Home Depot getting a whole tub of acid, a foot of 2-inch tubing, taking that to the checkout.
He had the best
Ted Bundy's in the next lane going, you too, mate, you too. Yeah.
Well, he had the best damn garage in town too. This is so true. Yeah, he's got it all. He got sick of NASCAR after a while because they were just pulling the rule book on him all the time. He had other things too, he had hollow frames of the car.
Right.
There's another couple of litres of fuel you can fit in. By this time, he's got about 12 patents. And if you go to the official website, you can see all the patents are things like the long-tipped spark plug and all this other stuff.
Legitimate stuff.
Yeah. Things that are still used. And he's in the NASCAR Hall of Fame and that kind of stuff.
Right.
So after he's sick of racing and sick of NASCAR, so he's working on other projects. He basically tried to make other engines that run on wind power, geothermal power, wave action or solar, but not nuclear. Wouldn't touch nuclear because he didn't like the waste.
He's played Fallout 4.
But essentially, we're talking 70s now. He's looking at alternative fuel sources.
I reckon yeah. So it's in the 70s.
Well, there were rocket cars back then.
This is true. And that's he could have been in NASA, really. Instead, he was... putting the car on a track in Pennsylvania.
He did have a column in New Scientist magazine.
No shit.
Not a scientist, but he read a lot of the books because he was interested in the aerodynamics and all that.
Yep.
Actually, funny aside, it's weird that we went from flight, as in manned flight, to man on the moon within 60 years. Yep. And it's been 60 years since the man on the moon. Haven't put one back there.
Really?
No, but we've got a Tesla in space,
This is not in the moon, but it's orbiting.
It's in space.
Where's that going to come down?
Well, we didn't really go to the moon. just look into it.
Come on, edgy bra.
He had an Agony Uncle magazine column in New Scientist where people come in, write in about their mechanical problems.
Ask Smokey.
Exactly what it was. It was Ask Smokey. Later on in life, he got leukemia and he's doing all the treatment and he's in a wheelchair and all that kind of stuff. Yep. And the doctor said, any experimental treatment, go for it. Yep. I'm your guinea pig.
He's added an extra kidney in somewhere.
Cancer now.
Exactly. But after a while, he's confined to a wheelchair. And he went, Doc, you know what? This sucks. Stop the medicine. I'm going to die. Doesn't matter. I just want to enjoy it. So he stopped the medicine. He got better because, it's a short-term thing, but the side effects are all gone. And he went, all right, we've got to sort myself out. He goes, if I go, I go. So he decided he'd been recording his life story, and he thought, I better fix this, get it done while I'm still alive.
Okay.
So he's got a couple of autobiographies. And if you read through them,
a couple.
He goes off on tangents, he talks, there's nothing there, but they are a great story. And then I think there's about 9 hours worth of audiobooks you can get from him. But what he also saw was some of his other friends who were quite famous died, and they tried to leave everything as a museum. Yep. And the families have to do the upkeep and all that kind of stuff. He said, that's kind of expensive.
Okay.
You've seen them suffer for it. He goes, I don't want a museum when I'm done. I want my tools to be used as tools. So he auctioned everything off.
Okay.
So his family didn't have to look after it. And he said, I don't want, big blue chipper or something to come in and they own the narrative.
Yeah.
So his tools, just sold them off, so they're in workshops everywhere.
Wrote his own narrative twice.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's choose your own adventure.
So he died 20 years ago, something like that.
Really?
But the last of it is, I don't know if you've ever seen Pixar's Cars movie.
Yeah.
Cars 3.
Yep.
There's an old Shelby in it called Smokey.
Oh, right.
Who knows all the tricks of the trade. So that's why he's a bit of a legend in NASCAR, because he was the one that, when he started, the rule book was very thin. When he finished, the rule book was very thick.
So he didn't necessarily write the book, but the book is because of him. It's pretty interesting to come up with what actually come up with just being a backyard mechanic and how that's still in being applied to car racing today. Like, given the, you know, it's probably born 40 years later, he'd been Adrian Newey.
Yeah, he was too smart for his time. But a lot of it was he just experiment. And say, let's see what this does.
Well, you know, these days you're worried, you know, will this blow up? But back then it was kind of like, eh, I can get...
this is going to blow up at some point.
That's how far ahead of his time was. Like, when his mate died, he's like, well, let's look at safety. What can we do?
Yeah.
Like I said, he invented the fucking tire wall.
That is crazy that NASCAR said, nah, I'm not sure about this, actually.
That's not crazy. That's true. Extended.
I'm still shocked that NASCAR doesn't have every driver with a gun. Like, steering was out of the old bootlegging days. Fuck it.
It should be like you drive 100 paces and turn and shoot.
That's why you have shotgun seats.
Yeah.
All right, Josh, you did some research as well. You got one?
Well, this is freaky, actually. I didn't expect you to go for race car driving, and I did. And also from a lad born in the 1920s and drove in the 40s and 50s.
Right.
Duncan Hamilton.
I was going to say, if his name's Smokey, you know, we're in trouble.
No, he's over in the... Born in Ireland, in Cork, in 30th April 1920. And at the time, motorsport was really popular with, you know, the rich young things. Like, you know, the ones that had inherited wealth.
So, as opposed to...
Yeah. Well, these days it's professional. But back then it was kind of like, you know, it was just what inherited money did. Because horses sucked. And now it's vice versa. But, you know, he enjoyed racing Austin Sevens at Brooklands. And when the war broke out, he joined the Fleet Air Arm, which is the naval area.
Right.
Okay. Right.
He flew fighters and recon aircraft and operated from the... carrier-based aircrafts in the English Strait.
So there's a lot of similarities with Smokey.
Except this guy's in the front, like as in he's in the driving seat. But we'll get to that. At the time, Germany had the best aircrafts, and on many occasions, Hamilton was shooting down bombers over the English Channel and frequently in genuine fear for his life. And so war goes on, and his ability to go from being fast asleep to flying a fighter very quickly served him well and suited his adrenaline-fueled personality. So he just loves this shit.
So he's like the early day Kimi Räikkönen.
Yeah.
So, fast asleep to firing a fighter. Is that what you mean? So you roll out of bed and let's go. Bang.
Pretty well, you know, you're in the aircraft carrier and all of a sudden the sirens go off. And it's like, fuck, right, out, bang, up, in, bang, up. You have to go from, you know, dead asleep to in the air in just moments the fighters, the channel's not that long.
Or just dead.
Well, yeah. Or you get shot down.
That'll get my adrenaline going, I'm going to be honest. I reckon I'd go from dead asleep to running the fuck out of there pretty quick.
But, you know, he goes from that to any time he's on duty, he could have to be within the next 10 minutes be flying and potentially being outnumbered by German bombers and fighters. So the adrenaline's pretty spiky around this time. And once the war finished, it was kind of hard to recapture that.
Yep.
So he went with sprints and hill climbs, got a supercharged MG R-Type, a car he once transported to Brighton Speed Trials in a lorry. Now, again, it was more an amateur sort of thing. So putting the race car on the back of a lorry, pretty common.
I was going to say,
And like hill climbs by sort of definition, but generally they always were amateur events where you just get your street car and you hammer it up a hill and timed event as opposed to actual side-by-side racing.
Yeah, and you know, around the UK, it's not that hilly. So oftentimes they'd have to not just look at above sea level, but how far in a valley you could get to get and then go up. And he's going to one of the tracks in Guildford.
Yeah.
And he's driving along with the MG on the back of the lorry, and he sees this beautiful honeycomb radiator of a Bugatti in the outside rearview mirror. And he's looking around, he's like, oh, that's a nice car. It's still driving the lorry. And so he moves over to let the beautiful Bugatti drive past, but the car's hanging back. And he's like, well, fuck, all right. It's a bit further down the hill. The Bugatti accelerated and drew level with him. And then Hamilton looks over and realizes there's no one in the car. And then he remembers, that's right. It's my own car. I was towing that too. He'd forgotten he was towing his Bugatti 35B behind the lorry. Unfortunately, the tow cable's still attached. They're flying down this hill, he's trying to turn. But the lorry, which has also got a car in the back over the rear axles, and the turning obviously is in the front, and the Bugatti, which is attached by a chain, they end up going different directions and wrapping around a tree and meeting in the middle.
Ooh.
So one goes left, one goes right, the chain hits the tree, they both turn in, head on, and of course the MG goes fucking flying.
I think I've seen this one on Roadrunner one time.
It's like that. But that's not his main claim to fame. That's just an interesting anecdote to this lad. So he also competed in the famous Remus era, Grand Prix Maserati, the Talbot Lago. And he built a career that encompassed 5 world champion Grand Prix, 18 championship Formula non-championship Formula 1 races, but it was Le Mans that he saw his greatest victories in, a team with co-driver Tony Roll. Now...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Like I said, in the 40s and 50s, it wasn't taken too seriously. So Duncan didn't take it too seriously either. He just liked to go out drinking, partying, meeting the girls. And racing was sort of what he did after that.
Yep.
So he was like a James Hunt before James Hunt.
Right.
He was also a bigger lad. The booze and rich food. He was like the Boonie at right. that time.
Imagine that's okay if you're batting number 3, but yeah. I imagine if you're driving a car.
Well, that's just it. Like the open cockpit Formula Ones, he didn't do so well in, but the sports cars, where his extra girth and stamina actually served him quite well, suited him really quite to a T, because it was more about endurance than it was about instant one-lap speed.
It's too hard to spill your drink in open cockpit.
It does sound like you could do a modern-day biathlon for them, sports car racing and darts.
Yeah. But anyway, on his Formula One work, in the 40s and 50s, he had 5 Formula One Grand Prix races, no significant success. But in the wet, he had few peers. In his GP at Lago Talbot, he even beat one Miguel Fangio in the Circuit International Trophy race at Silverstone 51. For anyone that knows anything about F1, Fangio is always in the top 5 races of all time ever. There's Fangio, Stewart, people put Schumacher up there now. And you could pretty much raffle off the rest. I put Brabham up there too, because he built the fucking car.
Yeah.
But... Fangio's always mentioned. He also finished 2nd to Reg Parnell and a long way ahead of Fangio, who would win that same the championship that same year. Like I said, he's a big lad, so perfect. He was a perfect build for sports car driver, which is the same to say if you're a tubby fucker, sit down at fullback.
And the funny thing about Fangio is he likes to party too, actually. Has that many illegitimate kids that they're actually having a fight over his estate at the moment.
Oh, fucking believe it. But anyway, his best successes were in Le Mans 24 Hours, which everyone who knows of racing knows Le Mans. It's sort of one of the most famous endurance races of all time, if not the. Bathurst 1000 wants to put itself up there, but it ain't close. He competed in it 9 times with his close friend Tony Roll. They were 4th on the first drive there in 1950 in a Healey, and 6th the following year. Now, Tony Roll was a lieutenant in the Rifle Brigade in 1940 and was sent to France. He was in charge of a reconnaissance platoon, and he was caught and made a prisoner of war after the Battle of Calais. And he was awarded a military cross for his work there, which he was firing on the Germans as they were bearing down on the retreat of Dunkirk. So a legit hero. Rolt escaped 7 times from German prisoner of war camps, including 2 Stalags, 4 Auflags, whatever they are, to the point where they put him in the maximum security prison called Auflag 4C, or Colditz Castle.
That's great, escaping 7 times, but...
He got caught 7 times. Yeah.
It means he got caught 7 times, minimum.
At one stage, from Colditz, he attempted an escape, got within 3 yards of the Swiss border before being recaptured, which is what accounted for him being transferred right back there into the deepest, darkest cell possible.
I feel like the Germans weren't too concerned about that Swiss border.
For his determined escape attempts, he was awarded a bar to his military cross. In 1944, he's one of the masterminds behind the audacious glider escape plan, which, if anyone remembers, I think it was called the Great Escape,
right.
Where they built the gliders and tried to escape from Colditz. Didn't quite work, but, the engineering was there.
Do you get the feeling like there was a record for the number of escapes? So he thought, I'll go for this, and just kept on getting caught, just to pad up his numbers?
I've legit heard a story from one of my girlfriend's dad's friends about how it took him 37 times to escape from Vietnam, and every time he'd get caught, had to try and not get shot, then they'd have to save up money again to pay the boat driver, dude on a boat to try and escape again. I'm like, 37 times, champ. Jesus Christ. Like, maybe you should come up with plan C or plan D. Like, let's try the same thing over again.
Maybe you should just board a boat.
I guess I try a different boat driver because I think he's tipping him off, mate.
After the war, Rott resigned his commission with the rank of major and he wanted to move into automotive. As a lot of them did. Rott Hamilton Partnership was in continued in 1954, where they finished second to a Works Scuderia Ferrari in a Jaguar D-Type. This was despite incident during a rail storm, where Rott realised he couldn't see properly, so he pitted for a visor, but a Ferrari was already in its pit. So the team waved him on again, and when he came back the next lap, the goggles were full of water, but literally swimming in the shit. He hopped out of the car to fix the visor, and Hamilton jumped in the car and was away. Having made a four-lap deficit, the Rott Hamilton D-Type less than 4Ks behind the victorious Ferrari. So he really caught him up.
Right, he caught up. Right. Okay. Right.
Caught up massively. They also finished second for Jaguar in the 12 Hours International, but retired from the 55 Le Mans while running in second place. Rolt and his wife, Lois, witnessed the disaster that year, which claimed more than 80 lives after Pierre Livesse Mercedes left the track and ploughed into spectators.
Ah, that one's on film too, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's fucking nasty, yeah.
After that, he concentrated on engineering. And by 1956, although a member of the Jaguar Works team, he retired from active duty to devote his full-time efforts to the Ferguson development program. But in 1953, which is where the crux of our story comes.
Thank God.
24 Hours Le Mans. Holt and Hamilton's finest hour. They arrive at the racetrack fully prepped and they're pumped up because they've had some good runs. They're ready and the Jag's running beautifully. The beautiful racing Jaguar green, if anyone remembers it. Number 18. They turn up, do their qualies, and I think they've qualified fourth. So they're in
good
spot. And then the scrutineers come over and say, lads, you're DQ'd. I'm like, what the fuck for? I'm like, well, there's another Jag over there with number 18, and they were here first.
Wow.
And so they've gone, you know, again, this isn't a modern-day professional sport. This is back in the day where they're like, oh, fuck it, all right. So what do they do when you've got a big bloke likes to party and another lad who's probably knee-deep in PTSD? They fuck off to the pub.
I feel like you could have just changed numbers.
Yeah. Well, no, they're painted on and, you know, all that shit. Yeah. So
look, it's now a seven.
Yeah. They head there and, you know, while the night away with French women, champagne and cognac. So after a full night of solid drinking, they're still up at 10 a.m. when the Mark 7 Jag pulls up and out gets the Jag Supremo, William Lyons. And he tells them, we're back in the race, boys. They look at him a bit confused and say, what race? He says, the 24 Hours Le Mans, it's 10 a.m. and it starts at 10:30. Get gear on. So they make like mad to the track. They get in there and they start pretty much as soon as they arrive. So they almost get a running start. At every pit stop, the crew fill the drivers up with coffee while the car's getting refueled.
I want to see that rig come out.
I want to see halfway through the lap, but go Maccas, go Maccas.
After about 4 hours in, driving at 130 miles an hour, Duncan headbutts a fucking bird. Like, manages to fly around, breaks his nose.
He's done the Fabio. Yeah.
Breaks his nose, doesn't feel a fucking thing. After a few more stops, Duncan's stopping, not drinking coffee anymore, because it's making his hand shake. So instead, to calm him down, the team give him a few brandies.
Jesus. Yep.
They manage to actually keep driving and keep going brilliantly because they finish first with the first team to average over 100 miles per hour in the history of Le Mans.
Yeah, the first team had the balls to try and average that speed.
So he was pretty, and it still stands that his capability was even better when pissed, but they both maintained, no. Whilst they had been up all night drinking, they sobered up in that half hour.
Of course they did.
Yeah, police bought it too.
But the 53 Le Mans story doesn't end there. As Hamilton drove to Oporto to prepare for the Portuguese Grand Prix,
I said he'd go to Macca's. I was close. He went to Oporto's.
Even
it's a chicken burger instead.
But even after, this is straight after the race. Like they've won. They've celebrated extensively, or topped up, depending on how you determine it. And heading to Oporto.
Just quietly, I wouldn't mind heading to Oporto. Right?
They're shutting down, motherfuckers.
Are they?
No, there's none in Doncaster and a few other places. I don't know. There's fewer of them. Leading in the first corner, when he crashed his Jag heavily into an electricity pylon, the Jag cartwheels throwing him out of the car and into a tree. He hung there for a minute before falling down on the side of the road. Barely conscious, he just moves his legs as a Ferrari races by, connects with the heel of his boot, and the boot flies off.
Oof.
He almost lost both legs. He had to be taken to hospital for emergency operation.
So that'd be fine, though, because he drives best when he's legless. Thank you. Done.
Recycling a Luke Hodge joke. Duncan was the medical facilities did not extend to anaesthetic, so as a surgeon leaned over him, Duncan was just mesmerised by the increasing length of the cigarette ash that was dropping into his chest cavity.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
And to top it all off, the reason that they couldn't operate effectively was because the crash had actually cut off the power supply for Porto for several hours.
That's why the burgers were cold.
Yeah. He managed to keep racing for the next 6 years, but he hung up in 1959 to concentrate on his garage, which is still thriving today and deals in high-end sports cars. He died in 94 at age of 74.
Oh, what was his garage called? Just
by the way. Second best damn garage.
But yeah, he was just one of those larger than life lads who loved a fucking drink and managed to have a boozy finest hour.
And won Le Mans when he was pissed.
Yep.
That was his big claim to fame.
I feel like 24 hours is a long time to go without a drink. So, especially in those days after being in the war. I mean, if you could go there and sort of escape Germany, driving a car pissed wouldn't be that much of a, you know, sort of a...
Well, that was his main role.
It's when he's looking for the bomb release button. He's like, yeah, got these fuckers.
But no, by all accounts, he was a quality driver, just a fat fucker who loved a beer as well and loved a party. But again, he's one of those ones that probably, like Fangio, will have about a half dozen illegitimate kids running around the place.
Yeah.
Good chance. All right, so there's a couple of loose units for you.
Yeah.
We'll have a look and see if we can't find some more to fill up the next. We've got 2 weeks before the season actually starts.
Mine will be coming up. I just haven't put it together because I was too hungover.
Yeah. Actually, I got a real quick one for you that I read about on Reddit during the week. The Russians recently won the ice hockey the gold medal. They're the Olympic athletes of Russia.
Yeah. Not the Russian team, the Olympic athletes from Russia.
Because of all the drug scandals. Anyway, because they were such a well-oiled machine. Yeah. But there's the local Russian ice hockey league at the moment.
Right.
Now, I'm going to miss... I think it's the KLA, the number one team. And that's Putin's favourite team.
Yep.
And they're a good chance to win it this year. And there's a couple of reasons why.
For I think starters, they're a great chance.
They're Putin's favourite? Hey, idea.
It's even better than that. For starters, their salary cap. They're allowed to pay five times the salary cap. So... And because the Olympics is, you know, for the motherland, we need to win, all the Olympic players are on the one team.
Oh, wow.
So, oh, but God. It's so fixed and everybody knows about it that they have to win. So they got the easy draw.
Oh, my God.
But it turns out into the playoffs, there's one team that's going to get relegated and they don't care. They're like, fuck it, we're going to try. And they nearly got there. They nearly beat them in the first round of the playoffs.
Ooh.
It got to overtime. It was a great document online. There's this one where, I don't know, offsides or icing, but if the puck goes over the line, then it's a penalty.
Yep.
And anyway, the team scored the winning goal, and they went, all right, we need to go watch the tape because they have video referees.
Okay.
The ball's a good 2 feet over the line, and they've gone, nah, it's good. It is that corrupt. Wow. It's like that. So you look it up, the Russian hockey.
It's like cricket in the UAE.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
All right, that'll do us for this week.
All right, peace.
See ya.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.